Welcome to the FDD Events Podcast. I'm Cliff Mate, founder and president of FDD, and pleased to share with you the following conversation. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so you don't miss out on future FDD events.
Good morning. It's Friday, March 8th. The war in the Middle East is now 154 days old. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Welcome back to the FDD Morning Brief. The funny thing about the FDD Morning Brief is that I never, ever thought I would do this. But there came a moment in this war when I realized the news here in the United States was just not cutting it. So I decided to give the people what I thought they needed. And if you're one of those people, I'll just thank you now for tuning in. I wish I could do it every day, but alas, there is just not enough time in my schedule. So 3 times a week will have to suffice. FDD's resident watcher of terrorism on social media will be joining us shortly. Joe Truesman is a senior research analyst at FDD and a contributor to FDD's Long War Journal. His social media feed is filled with fascinating little nuggets about Hamas and Hezbollah and those other nefarious actors across the Middle East. We'll speak to him about his work in just a few minutes. But first, about last night. The president made a major announcement at the State of the Union. America plans to build a pier off the coast of Gaza to facilitate the delivery of aid. I have no doubt the people of Gaza need that aid. Lord knows they've suffered, first under draconian Hamas rule and now as human shields for the Iran-backed terror group amidst a withering Israeli military response to the 10/7 attacks. But between his legitimate concern over humanitarian challenges in Gaza and the escalating political pressure from progressives to scale back his support for Israel's war against Hamas, President Biden is wading into some murky Mediterranean waters. I know we've heard this project need not put a single boot on the ground in Gaza, but one way or another, this U.S. bridge is going to become part of the larger mess. I mean, if you don't think that this thing will become a target of Iran's many proxy armies, I have a pier to sell you. The aid will supposedly arrive by way of Cyprus. We love Cyprus. They're great allies. But who's going to scan these shipments for weapons? Not the Cypriots. That's not their bag. Is it America's? I hope not, because if anything slips through, we're going to have Israeli blood on our hands. Also, who's going to make sure that the aid doesn't get diverted once it lands in Gaza? Definitely not America. If we are serious about ending this crisis, we should stand aside and let the Israelis finish off Hamas in Rafah, preferably once Ramadan has come and gone. Then we can build more than a pier. We could actually begin to help build a lot more than that in Gaza. Isn't that the goal? Now for your headlines. Headline one. The U.S. may restrict weapon shipments in the coming weeks to Israel, according to a report from Barak Ravid of Axios. So let me just get this straight. 5 months into a grueling war against a legion of well-armed Iranian proxies, the U.S. is now signaling that Israel may have to fight with less or maybe not at all. To put it another way, American domestic politics is starting to dictate Israeli national security. So now what? The Israelis are probably scrambling to find other sources for the munitions they need. They'll be working to stand up factories for domestic production. But there are wider implications here. If America's allies see that we're not a reliable partner when it counts in the middle of a grueling war in the Middle East, what are the odds they'll want to stay allies? I'm pretty sure the Saudis are eyeing the exits right now. I mean, heck, we could be watching the unraveling of the U.S.-led world order in the Middle East. Let's hope Barak Ravid got a bum lead. Headline two, Israel has reportedly set a deadline for Hezbollah to withdraw from southern Lebanon. Beware the Ides of March. Yep, this thing is getting Shakespearean, folks. March 15th is the Israeli deadline, according to Israeli and Lebanese sources. That's a week away. So here's my question. Can Israel fight that war in the north without a steady supply of U.S. weapons while also fighting a second front in Gaza? Is the U.S. trying to shut the IDF down during Ramadan? Or is this an attempt to shut the whole thing down for much longer? You have to wonder whether the Israelis are feeling betrayed here. Et tu, Biden? And headline three. With Ramadan rapidly approaching, hostage negotiations appear to have collapsed in Cairo. The path ahead is not clear. It's not possible to get a deal done in the next 2 days, in my opinion. It's really not likely. So could the negotiations extend into Ramadan? Absolutely, but I question whether Hamas is serious at this point. The key to a deal appears to be Yahya Sinwar, and that doesn't fill me with warm and fuzzies. The guy is certifiably bonkers, and he's been living in underground tunnels for the last 5 months. His desire to kill Israelis is only matched by the Iranian regime's desire to keep him fighting Israel to the last Palestinian. For the sake of the region, it's time for a mutiny among the Hamas ranks. Seriously, guys, this guy needs to go. Okay, it's now my pleasure to introduce Joe Truesman. Joe has been a key member of the FDD team during this war. He's a senior research analyst and a regular contributor to FDD's Long War Journal. And his social media feed is filled with interesting videos and photos that reveal quite a bit about Hamas and Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad and that broader menagerie of Iran-backed terror groups we talk about here all the time at the FDD Morning Brief. Joe got up insanely early on the West Coast to join our program. I hope he's had a strong cup of coffee. Let's find out. Welcome, Joe Truesman.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing great. Let's dive in here. You've been with FDD now for 4 years, actually kind of hard to believe that time's flown by. Just for the sake of our audience, getting them up to speed, how'd you get into this business?
Right, so in early 2018, I took an interest in the March of Return, which is a protest at the Gaza-Israel border, which was seemingly led by Palestinian civilians. But there was something off about it, just due to the level of violence that was going on. The March of Return, it broke new ground as far as the size of the Palestinian crowds that were gathering at the Gaza border. And the level of violence that was happening there. Specifically, there were incendiary-laden balloons being launched into southern Israel with the aim of burning crops and hurting Israeli civilians. So I used open source methods for my research into this. I used Twitter, Facebook, Telegram to track down those who I suspected were members of armed groups, that were protesting along with the civilians. And what I did with the data, I published it on social media. I received a lot of positive attention. And what happened there is I began to build my brand. Then fast forward in 2020, I joined FDD as a research analyst, and I began to expand my work on FDD's Long War Journal.
Yeah, and FDD's Long War Journal, as we all know, is read often by military and intelligence folks. It's got a great audience for those that have not taken a drive through over there. Certainly recommend it. All right, well, let me just tell you or ask you to tell me about the West Bank. We're seeing that the IDF has made enormous numbers of arrests over there. They've deployed more forces than we even see in Gaza right now. That should tell you something. So what exactly is going on in the West Bank?
Yeah, you're right. So I've observed an uptick in violence in the West Bank since 2021, specifically June 2021 when it started. Of course, the main actors are established terrorist organizations, right? So you have Islamic Jihad, you have Hamas, of course, and the Fatah-linked Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades. And a lot of these groups, they're supported by Iran. So on the subject of IDF arrests in the West Bank, last week the IDF stated approximately that they had arrested approximately 3,500 wanted Palestinians. This is post October 7th. 3,500 wanted Palestinians in the West Bank. 1,500 were associated with Hamas. So that's a lot of people. So what I've observed is that Israeli forces, they are managing the West Bank. This is what they've been doing before October 7th, and this is what they're doing now after October 7th. However, but I do, obviously we've observed more arrests, but there's been other things going on. There's more drone strikes against Palestinian terrorist groups. Before summer 2023, airstrikes in the West Bank, that was pretty rare. But of course, there's also there's been an increase in raids against senior members of terrorist groups in the West Bank. And all this is short of a major operation in the West Bank, like we saw in Jenin for a few days last year. So we got to think to ourselves, so why is this happening, right? There are several factors here. Chiefly, I think it's a weak Palestinian authority, right? They are unable to enforce law and order, especially in the northern West Bank. Also, Iran is involved here. It's increased support to terrorist organizations by smuggling arms. Also, I think West Bank terrorist groups believe that Israel may be a little distracted with what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank and in Lebanon.
I think rightfully so. I would note, though, that 3,500 number, those arrests that you mentioned, and I think that may even be a low ball. I mean, we see some numbers that are higher. I think that's the official number released by the IDF, but that's roughly equal, I think, to the number of arrests that they've made or people that they've kept under arrest out of Gaza. So really remarkable numbers. Thanks for staying on top of that. Let me ask you about some research you did last year for FDD. Yeah. You found that there were actually 18 different terror groups operating in the West Bank. That's a large number. And obviously there's a lot of connection between these groups themselves. They collaborate, but then there's also the question about the connection between what they're doing in the West Bank and what they're doing in Gaza. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I've identified these terrorist organizations operating essentially, they're on Israel's borders. So the range, it can be, it depends, right? So some of them are in the low hundreds. Some of them are in the tens of thousands of members, like Hamas, of course. So these groups operate in the West Bank, they operate in Gaza. And for years, I've tracked the words and actions of these organizations, specifically with a focus rather on Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and of course, Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades. So as I mentioned previously, I researched them using open source methods, specifically social media, that they also use to communicate with members. They also use it to send messages or information to, well, their supporters. I read the information that they freely post to get an understanding that their operations and about their operations. And then I try to gather this evidence and to see what the acts of terrorism that they're perpetrating, not only on Israelis, but on their own civilians. Since 2021, some Palestinian terrorist groups, for example, there's the Popular Resistance Committees, there's the Mujahideen Brigades, they've tried to establish cells in the West Bank. But these are groups, historically, these are groups that they don't operate in the West Bank. They operate in Gaza. So they're trying to make inroads in the West Bank now. And unfortunately, as you've covered in previous morning briefs, the Palestinian Authority is corrupt. It's ineffective. For more than a year now, I believe they've lost control of parts of the West Bank, especially the northern West Bank. And accordingly, Hamas has taken advantage of this instability, right? It's directing terrorist attacks in the West Bank. For example, a year ago in March, Hamas members in Turkey, they recruited four Palestinian students to carry out terrorist attacks in the West Bank. Thankfully, they were thwarted.
Yeah, and of course, Turkey, we know, continues to actively operate in the West Bank as well as the Iranians. I would note, by the way, just for our listeners and viewers, that the work that you do looking at some of these accounts, it's interesting. I mean, on the one hand, it gives us this incredible insight, allows you to observe what these people are doing and how they're organizing. Then there's the question of, you know, whether it's X or Facebook or Instagram or any of these outlets, certainly Telegram, maybe they should be shutting them down, right? Because at the end of the day, they're owned and operated by terrorist organizations. This is, I think, an ongoing debate that continues to rage within our space. So anyway, at least for now, they're open and you're watching them. And we thank you for what you do there. But let me turn to the North. That's a favorite topic of mine as I continue to watch the prospects for a second front to open. Certainly not something that I'd welcome, but you've been tracking what's going on in Lebanon. You've been watching what Hezbollah's doing there. Lately, you've observed some players that you didn't expect to find there. What's the story with these foreign fighters in Lebanon?
Right. I think it's very interesting. So since October 7th, of course, I've been tracking the terrorist groups that I previously mentioned, but they've been publishing information on their fallen fighters. I found this information using the same open source methods that I've talked about before, Twitter, Telegram, Facebook. So these organizations, these terrorist organizations, they freely publish the names of the fallen fighters, including, which is really important here, is the nationalities, right? Their nationalities. So I've learned that some of these fighters were not just members of, or not just Lebanese, or members of Hezbollah, right? Some were Turks that were members of Hamas. Some were Syrians, right, that were members of Islamic Jihad that came from Syria. There are some fighters that belong to a Syrian group that doesn't generally operate in the in Lebanon, and it's backed by Iran, created by Iran. And of course, we have Palestinians. So this matters. It matters because we're seeing these groups that are all a part of Iran-led axis of resistance, right? That's fighting Israel. So there's observed this increase in coordination between all these organizations that I've mentioned, as well as an increased support from Iran and an increased support, of course, to Hamas. So what they're doing here, I think, is that they're bringing warfighting expertise to southern Lebanon with the aim of fighting Israel.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think we're certainly watching an attempt anyway by the Iranians to internationalize this conflict. And certainly we've talked about it before, the way this has become sort of a regional war. And it's not surprising to see these different nationalities so close to Israel's border, but certainly not welcomed. Okay, last question for you here. What's ahead? I mean, we're facing Ramadan that starts for Muslims on the evening of March 10th. We know that the Israeli police have taken extraordinary measures to prepare for this month-long holiday of feasting and fasting. What do you think Hamas will do differently this time?
Right. So I'm observing a few things. First of all, an urgency, right, by the Biden administration, by other countries, and by Israel, I would say, to reach a temporary ceasefire with Hamas before Ramadan. So, you know, we have to think. Israel has set out itself, at the beginning of the war, Israel set itself some two important goals, right? The destruction of Hamas, right? And to get their hostages back, the ones that were obviously taken captive on October 7th. You know, I was at the Gaza border in January. I spent time with the IDF. I spent time with Israeli officials. I also visited Nir Oz, which is one of the kibbutzim that was attacked on October 7th. So my feeling that I got is that that the Israelis, they remain determined and to see an end to this war and, of course, get the hostages back. I can also say Israel appears prepared to make difficult decisions especially to get these hostages back. That means releasing Palestinian prisoners, high-value Palestinian prisoners that have been in Israeli jails for, well, just acts of terrorism. also, I'm observing an increase in coordination, right, between Palestinian terrorist organizations that really wasn't there before. They're relying on each other for more for intelligence and materiel, as well as launching joint attacks against Israel. So, for example, a few days ago, I was reading an Islamic Jihad channel that's on Telegram. They published video evidence of coordinated attacks with Mujahideen brigades against Israeli troops. This is something I haven't really seen before. But the bottom line here is that I think Hamas is on the ropes, but they're still a factor. The other terrorist organizations that we were just talking about, I think what they're going to do is use Ramadan to foment violence against Israel. Lastly, Hamas, its partners in the Gaza Strip, and of course, the Iran-led axis of resistance want to stalemate with Israel. They need international pressure to bring the permanent ceasefire, bring about a permanent ceasefire, because they know Hamas can't defeat Israel one-on-one on the battlefield.
All right. It's going to be interesting. We'll check back with you maybe in a month to see what you've seen. Hopefully, we'll watch a relatively quiet Ramadan come and go. Fingers crossed. Thank you, Joe Truesman, for taking some time out today to speak with us on The Morning Brief.
Thank you for having me, John.
Okay, here's what FDD has on tap for you today. Connor Pfeiffer at FDD Action published a piece in the Wall Street Journal after a recent trip he took to Mexico, where he met with American and Mexican business leaders. He warns of a loophole that Beijing seems to be exploiting in the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement to avoid paying U.S. tariffs on electric vehicles. Connor outlines specific things that Congress and the administration can do to counter this. My colleagues at FDD's nonproliferation program teamed up with the technical experts at the Institute for Science and International Security for a new assessment of Iran's nuclear breakout time, just in time for the IAEA meeting in Vienna. Their new visual shows that Iran could have enough material for a nuclear weapon in as little as 7 days. In 1 month, the regime could have what it needs for 7 weapons. Turns out the French, the British, and the Germans try to censure Iran at the IAEA. The Biden administration blocked them. Unbelievable. And finally, I'll be kicking off a virtual FDD event later this morning at 11:15 a.m. Leading experts from Israel and the United States will analyze the many illicit finance concerns that we're watching out of Turkey. As you've heard me say often, Recep Tayyip Erdogan's one-man rule has turned Ankara from a reliable ally to a terror-funding, anti-American, anti-Semitic security and financial risk. This event is definitely worth an hour of your time. Okay, that's it for today. Read our expert analysis on our website, fdd.org. Read our quick takes on X at FDD and support our work with a tax-deductible donation at fdd.org/invest. Tune in Monday for another installment of the FDD Morning Brief. We'll feature an interview with journalist Abdulaziz Al-Khamis. He'll be the first Saudi on the FDD Morning Brief, so tune in. Until then, I'm Jonathan Shanzer, signing off for FDD.